Here we go. All righty, write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Come on in, everybody, to the State Roofing text line at 989873. All are welcome.
Diving into the building.
I jumped into Little Creek, which is the creek that runs into Big Creek, which then runs into the Yakima, Tom, and I got a big mouthful of it today, and I kept thinking, is there like cattle up the way that are pooping and peeing in it? Because I've heard that kind of stuff happens, but I'm still okay, so that's all good news. All right, the big news, I guess this is big news, because you wouldn't expect unions be forming anywhere down in the southeastern part of the United States, but Amazon, with a bunch of whole people that work in these big warehouses, I think 5,800 or something in there, they've started voting. I think yesterday the vote finished. Monday they started. Tuesday they will finish it all up, and then they will have all the votes will now be tallied, and we'll get some idea as to whether or not they decide they would like to form a union there at that warehouse, because if they are able to get that going there, most likely it'll spread to all the other locations with the 800,000 employees or something like that Amazon's got. So this will be the first time that Amazon has stared down the barrel of the union and lost.
Well, so far, yeah, and lost. Yeah, so far they've managed to successfully hold off any efforts at various places around the country, as has Walmart, for instance. The voting actually has been going on for a month. It just wrapped up yesterday, I think. And so they figure it'll take a few days, maybe as long as a week. My guess is we'll probably know by the end of the week whether this was successful or not. The quote they're using to headline a lot of their articles is lighting a fuse. This would be seen if the union actually comes to pass. It could be seen as lighting a fuse for Amazon workers. And then they say if it really catches on at Amazon, there's no reason why maybe it couldn't catch on. And this would be a revival of a union movement which has been, you know, ever since I think it peaked maybe in the 70s, but certainly was not as prevalent in our everyday lives for decades now, the union revival. I personally don't see it. I think this is a tough place to pull this off. Amazon points out that they are paying something like twice the minimum wage in Alabama. Now, I think it's pretty low in Alabama, but it's twice the minimum wage. It's a lot of jobs in a relatively beleaguered, economic sector there in Bessemer, Alabama. So I'm surprised it's getting this much attention, because I'm assuming that it will be a pretty significant let me phrase that. I'm assuming they're not going to be a majority. It could be a scant majority, like a one person vote majority, which would make it unionized. However, I do think that the argument that's being made by the people that are pro-union and anti-union is if it's even close, that will be considered, you know, like a step up for the union movement. So we'll have to see the most recent votes on these kinds of things. Sometimes they're wipeouts against the union. Sometimes they're relatively close. Union still is lost. I'm assuming they're probably going to lose here. The one hope they said, because the month-long voting is, you know, it's taken so long, they think the early votes, however many of those that came in, were probably anti-union, because that was before the union people had much contact with the employees, and Amazon heavily influenced the early people that voted. They say the union seems to have made some inroads among the employees of late, and so if the union side did win, it would be because of a late surge. Finally, I think the best hope that they have is that if this is seen in some kind of racial lines, this is what's the most interesting thing. And sorry, John, I don't mean to be, filibustering this. Did you want to jump in or about the race component?
I know that
Alabama
is the most unionized state of the southern states other than Kentucky. About
9%
of the population is in a 9% in the population is or 8.7 is in some union. The question is always, what does the corporation say to the worker? Like, if here's what you gain and here's what you lose. Amazon says we want everybody to vote. They do want to hear from everybody. Whether they want you, of course, they want you to vote no non-union. But then you start to think, okay, what do I lose if I join the union? What do I gain if I join the union? And then you start to say, okay, they're going to take X amount of dollars from you every single month, and they're going to take that money, and then what do they do in return for that? Because what we can do is, rather than you giving the $600 a month to the union, we'll do this, this, and this. But if you give up that thing, we're going to negotiate with you differently, and we won't be able to, you know, you're going to lose some of that. So the people that are in the Amazon, they've also have high turnover. That's the other part of it. If you're in that union, you join the union, and then you find yourself working for Amazon for only a few months, and ultimately, what are you getting out of it? So then you decide, well, I'm not going to be here. I'm not going to stay in this job for very long anyway. I'm not going to pay that extra money to have that union. It doesn't protect me. The union thing was always, the person was in for 30 years, and the union was there, and the union had their back the whole time. But if you're popping in and out of a job, I think you're less likely. The same thing if you're renting and you don't have any roots down in a community, you're less likely to vote for what's happening locally with your legislator. So if you're just sort of in there and it's like, well, I'm only going to do this for a little bit and then I'm moving on to something else, you probably would not be wanting to have the $600 or whatever it is every month that they take out of your salary. Ultimately, when you mentioned the race part of it, Tom, that's coming into play.
Yes. Well, so one of the I think this is where the union might have a shot. Again, I don't think it's going to be enough, but I think it's something like 85% of the employees there are black. And it is being sort of like twined with the civil rights movement that you see this. Yeah. If you start seeing it as a civil rights issue, then you don't look at it so much as am I personally as this one man or woman benefiting, but more as a social cause that would be good. That could maybe turn the tide a bit. And one last thing, John, I think was interesting. They said that in a lot of these cases where unions have voted, even if it was just close, or if they voted to actually unionize in other situations, and I can't remember which big company was, but they can then turn around and close the shop down, which has happened across the country. Said, okay, you guys want this unionized? You know, Amazon just can't make it work, and it just doesn't pencil out, Bessemer, Alabama. So we are going to close shop and maybe move a little place, you know, someplace a little more kind to. So, I mean, there are a lot of, options that Amazon has, even if they happen to be surprised by this vote.
Yeah, boy, that would be – if I were there and somebody said, you know what, if we do this, they're going to leave, you're thinking, I'm not voting for that. I'd rather have the job at $15 an hour than at whatever the union can get me plus the other thing. So, yeah, that would stop me. I just voted no on it. Just in my head, thank you, Tom, for that.
And then I would balance you by voting yes, and then where would we be?
And then well, we'd both be out of a job because Amazon, they've already proved to us that they can pick up and leave. We're watching that now happening in Seattle as they head over to Bellevue. Let's whip over to the fact,
John,
that
they're expanding to Bellevue. They're not leaving Seattle. We still have like 50,000 employees here in Seattle. They're just expanding to Bellevue.
Are they expanding in Seattle or are they shrinking in Seattle?
Well, they're not shrinking in Seattle. They're holding firm.
Are they growing in Seattle? Are they growing in Seattle?
Well, not necessarily, but maybe.
Okay.
Yes.
That means they're growing in Bellevue.
Seattle can only hold so much.
Nope.
Yes.
They're growing in Bellevue because Seattle sucks for business. In fact,
yeah,
the perfect example of it is.
I know. That's the narrative you want, but it's not true in Seattle.
Let me ask you this, Tom. Are they growing in Seattle? We know they're growing as a business. Where are
they're
they
not growing
to
as
grow?
Much as they
Bellevue?
Are in Bellevue?
Nope.
Bellevue
no.
Is
are they
Seattle.
Growing as they grow as a business? Are they growing in Seattle or are they growing in Bellevue?
I think they said they were going to add up to 5,000 more jobs to equal 50,000 in Seattle, and that is about what Seattle can handle. So, and then they're expanding, so Bellevue is getting the beneficence of it.
They're building a building. They're building a building in Bellevue, Tom.
I know. And so Republicans try to make it argue that Seattle's so anti-business. If they really wanted to make a point, Amazon, they could uproot themselves and move across the water. Instead, we're just becoming a bigger, Puget Sound hub. That's all to the good.
So there's no difference
of the water.
Right. So there's no difference between Seattle and Bellevue as far as the business is concerned.
There might be now, but we've already established it in Seattle. Yes. I'm sure you'd rather go to business friendly, but remember, it's still part of King County. It still has a social conscience. Amazon claims to want to help on the homelessness issue and all of that. So Bellevue is not that different. In our eyes, it may seem like, Democrat and Republican, but in the business world, it's the Puget Sound economy.
In the business world, you pick up and you vote with your feet. Amazon is not growing in Seattle.
Well,
Amazon
Expedia came here. Wasn't Expedia right. across the water? They came here. I mean, so it's back and forth.
They're over in that building that used to be part of the big pharma thing over there, right? So what you have is Amazon, and Jeff Bezos will do anything he can to avoid the taxes, and certainly he gets tired of being the evil guy and the villain that the Seattle City Council, when they have a tax named
and
after
Trump.
You, when you have a tax named after you, you have an idea that maybe you have a target on your back. The Amazon tax, right? It's like, whoa, where can we go? Let's go across the water where they want us to be there, where we can build a building, where we can employ people, where people can be over there. Whether Expedia needs to be in Seattle so the people
working
in Expedia feel like they're part of some urban sort of coolness. I guess Amazon's like, we'll give up the coolness.
They're not giving it up, John. You're not listening to me. They're not giving it up. They're keeping it here and expanding across the water. Bellevue is like a big part of Seattle. It's this whole area.
Why not expand in Seattle?
Because we've already got too big. Amazon has too big a footprint in Seattle as it is.
Oh,
we don't
too big.
Need,
so there's no more
we
room.
We don't want to become
there's
a
no
one
more room.
Company town.
Yeah, that's what it is. World Health Organization has come out with the latest propaganda via China, which is basically, hey, we've done some investigating, we've looked into it, and we are pretty sure that it's, well, what did you guys want us to say? The fact that the people that went into the Wuhan laboratory prior to getting in there, China did everything they possibly could to destroy the files, to hide the stuff. They wouldn't let them go to certain places. It's like going into Iran and trying to find, you guys, you're not enriching uranium, are you, up to a level of being able to produce? No. Can we go over here and look? Nope, can't go over there. Can't go over there and look. Same thing in China, same thing in the Wuhan when it comes to the laboratory. What was the origin of this virus? World Health Organization has said what, Tom?
They said that they are not happy with what China gave them access to. And so this report, it's almost as if they're disowning their own report. They send all these people
Shocking.
Over and they come up with these conclusions. And they said, but we didn't have access. So the question of the origins is still open. And everybody, so it's one thing. So the Biden administration is complaining. 13 other, Western European countries and the like are complaining about China. Everybody's complaining about China. And even WHO now has gotten on board saying, yes, we need to do more than what we've had access to. We need to work harder on getting China to respond to the kind of data we need to establish the origins. So basically they throw up their hands and say, as far as the origins, everything is inconclusive. Now the report seems to indicate that the lab possibility that it came from a lab is the least likely, but until you can establish what is the most likely, that's not going to, hold much water for people that are already skeptical.
China lied to the world. I mean, and the WHO, and so did the World Health Organization. When China came out and said, "Oh no, it doesn't cross transmit. It's not going human to human." That was the first lie. They knew that was a lie. They knew the numbers, and they lied. Health Organization. Yeah, they said that. They said it does. There's no contamination.
No, I know they said
no cross human to human, right?
Yes.
And they also knew because they had earlier information that people were getting sick because they had gone into the hospitals and they had seen this virus was starting to move. And they killed the guy that did the first announcement on it. They were able to have him killed, a 34-year-old guy. And this is an. And then the World Health Organization covered for China as well and told everybody, nothing to worry about here. It's not a virus, not anything that we can have to worry about. And they stuck it out there. This virus spread, and the World Health Organization covered for China as China lied to the world, and it spread into Europe and came into the United States. And I don't know how many people could we have gotten a handle on it sooner if we didn't have the World Health Organization and China together spreading propaganda. That's it's part of the story. I don't think we'll ever get it from China. And we've just seen that we went in there to investigate and they cut off and stopped a number of us from getting more information. So what do we do at this point? How do you take China to court or do something in order to pray, to get the World Health Organization to actually step up and represent all of us, not just China?
Well, but John, you should be cheered by the fact that they came out and condemned the inefficiency of this latest report because of China's lack of access. They want access to, like, in September, before the outbreak. They want to see what was like pre-outbreak and trace from September up until whenever, you know, December or January, when it kind of, you know, went worldwide. They want that data, and they don't have access to the data. So they're trying to pressure them. Now, as we all know, Americans try to pressure China, and even Russia tries to pressure China. China is its own, makes its own decisions. So I don't know how much worldwide pressure can be, you know, laid at their feet or actually be effective. But they are, at least by going public with this take on the report, they are trying to pressure China, just like we wouldn't be pressured into revealing things that we don't want to reveal to the rest of the world. My hunch is that China will be dragging its feet at best.
Now, can we keep saying China without fear of somebody punching somebody?
Yes.
I can. All right. Because I saw the video of that 65-year-old lady getting whacked yesterday in New York City at 11:30 in the morning. Oh, my God. I don't know if that'll be hate crime or not. Oh, it's terrible. Tracy Terrell, look at traffic for us. Here we go, Kia Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Kia Mortgage, that's Laura Keel and everybody working there. Hard to make sure that your mortgage goes through lickety-split. Stress and strain of out there looking for a house. Make sure you get a pre-approval letter. Let everybody know that you are serious about that house. Keel Mortgage, a name respected into the industry of mortgages and securing homes. Thank you, Laura Keel. Keel Mortgage, highly recommend them from personal experience. I read this story, and I can tell you, I do know old people older than me, older than you, Tom. And most of the ones that I know were sort of rebellious, or at least not necessarily locking themselves down and staring at the wall waiting to hear from to tell them that they could go back out again. The only guy that I know that I actually didn't know until, you know, I bought this place out here was Dougie. I didn't know that the reason we all had to sit in his garage and drink beer and celebrate Thanksgiving and eat and Christmas in his garage was because he was afraid of COVID. I thought he just ever go in his house. And then somebody said, no, he's deadly afraid of dying of COVID. So that's why we have to sit out in his garage and drink. I thought that was just a clum thing. That's just what everybody does. You go into people's garages and drink. The piece in the Wall Street Journal basically pointing out that, look out, grandma and grandpa have gotten vaxxed, and now they're like spring breakers, Tom.
Yeah, I think this is pretty hilarious. The idea here is that those of us who are vaccinated, double vaccinated, spent the 2 weeks out, we feel like we are free as a bird. And so people in their, you know, like 65 and above. And yet we have children who are, you know, in their 20s and 30s. And they are looking askance at us saying, that is too dangerous. Don't you guys shouldn't be doing things. You can still get it. And the irony is that right now, the people that were more at most at risk now feel like they are invincible. And they're doing things that make their own kids and their own kids' families feel uncomfortable. For instance, they would go out. Now, if you're double vaccinated, you're pretty safe. I mean, you still, there's still not convincing evidence for full proof that you can't transmit it, but it's probable, and you're probably not going to get it. It's like 90%, protective. But because you've been out with other people that may not have been as carefully monitored, sometimes those elderly people's families are concerned that they might get it for if they have certain comorbidities and they don't have their own vaccines. So it's this kind of push to, shake your finger at your parents like your parents used to shake fingers at the kids. That's sort of what the gist is.
But what So is it the fact that now the older people, this is prior to the dam breaking and everybody cheating the system and getting vaccinated now, but so this would be a couple of weeks ago where it's like, so let me get this straight. So the 70-year-old people that are double vaccinated are now going out and doing things, and the 35 or 40 or 45-year-old daughter is not doing anything because she's still holed up, and the parents are now doing things. Is that the
it could,
idea?
It could be, but it's also, you know, like you acknowledge, it's human nature to kind of cheat the system a bit in that, for instance, they cite this one couple of parents, and they got their second vaccination, but you're really not considered, you know, good, like you're fully vetted or fully vested, maybe, until 2 weeks after the second shot. Well, as soon as they got their second shot, they flew out to see this, you know, the kid's family, and they've got four kids and all this, and they said, hey, you know, listen, this is not such a great idea for you or for us. It's that kind of stuff. It also is just a chance, I think, to kind of have fun at the expense of older people. They profile this guy named Ms. Borstein, who joined a Romeo group. I can see you doing this. Romeo group stands for Retired Old Men Eating Out. And he's going to now join a bridge club and all this. And he says, my social life's been zilch for a year, and now I'm ready to, you know, he's hot to trot, so to speak.
Yeah. I guess I hear Rachel comes on at 4:30 and talks about, you know, old quarantine and knitting and making soup and making bread and stuff. I don't feel any of that. I still flew. I still went out. I found restaurants that violated the rules. And I surrounded myself with other people that were just not going to just going to look at the numbers and say, you got a 99.9% chance
of surviving
this
thing.
So you know what? I'm going to continue to live my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And screw on that other stuff and just going to keep going. But I mean, I know people that really, you know, double masking and walking around outside with, and their kids have masks on and they're all, you know, giving you 15 feet and that you got to show them something on your phone and they won't take the phone. And then you hold it up and they're like, well, I can't see it from here. And you go to hand it to them. And it's like, are you kidding me? This is like that Dustin Hoffman movie where Outbreak or whatever. Like, but believe me, you're 40 years old. You're in great shape. You're not going to die, okay? So just stop it. But certain people just went absolutely crazy on it.
But they did, John, as long that's their decision, and who are you to, you know, sort of interfere in their social space? That's the thing. They're not calling you out.
They can live in their crazy.
That's right. So
I'm not over there coughing and sneezing in their face in a closed environment, and I'm not sick.
Yes. So, John, this is not.
I don't bother. Go ahead.
This is not meant to be. This is more of a kind of a lighthearted article looking at that this 71-year-old got in a spat with his 38-year-old son because he'd only got the first of the two vaccines, and they flew to Mendocino County. Then they took a trip through Central Valley to Arizona, and then they did all these kind of touristy kinds of things. And so he was just saying, Dad, what are you doing? You know, you're not safe. But it's more, I think the way we should look at this article is the kind of personal interactions that people have among family members, because within a family you probably have people that take it a little more seriously than not, and there's just that little tension, and it's kind of having fun with it, keeping in mind this is like now parents being scolded by, you know, the youngins. I don't think this is meant to be a kind of fist in your face, how dare you, kind of a human interest story. I don't know
my
if you
my brother has probably 25 employees. He's got four lawyers that work for him. He runs the firm. And then he's got, you know, other people that are in there, right? Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he goes, I hope you don't mind, because I was supposed to go out at Thanksgiving, whatever. And he goes, I hope you don't mind. Don't come. I said, why? He goes, because if I get it, he goes, I'm going to die. But if I get it and I give it, he goes, it could do a number on my business, because it's a thin line running a lawyer thing. When you're a small shop,
a firm,
you have people that screw you, don't pay you. He goes, so if I got sick and then somebody else gets sick, and then it could just, you know, knock everybody out of my office for like 4 weeks, and I would really be hurting. So can you just not?
No.
He goes, now you can make fun of me later on, but just don't come. So he basically, I said, that's fine. I don't care. I don't really want to get out there and see you anyway. So I'll find some other place to go.
But see, but yeah. Good for Chuck then. So he took it more seriously than maybe you did, but there are consequences. You don't have the kind of 25 firm consequences.
He's always been responsible. He's always been responsible.
That's not hard to imagine, John.
Yeah,
you're probably the least
the
responsible.
Playing by the rules. And it bothers him. He's like, when he gets drunk, he goes, you don't understand. I did everything right. I cared about school. I studied. I separated my dark clothes from my light clothes. I did everything right. And you did nothing. You did none of, you played by none of the rules. And you have a better life than I have. I'm like, and there you go. You see? He's like, it's not fair. That's not the way it's supposed to work. I'm like, yeah, this is the way it works, Chuck. Get used to it.
See, that's why he really didn't want you to come out. He didn't want you to have to slobbering confession to you again about how you lived your life better than I did.
No, not better. That he played by the rules.
Yeah,
right?
And it turned out.
He did the work. He did the work, and both of us are in the exact same spot, although he looks at it like you have a better life. You don't have as much responsibility as I do, and he hates the law, and he hates the job, and he hates the stuff that he has to do.
Wow.
But he does it anyway because he has to pay the bills. Most lawyers will tell you that they hate the job.
By the way, just to kind of put a bow on the story, there was a great, clever musical bit on Saturday Night Live about the boomers, how the boomers are lording it over.
Boomers, greatest generation. Got all the money, now we got the vaccination. Crash the economy three whole times. When it comes to the vax, we the first in line.
Got a job out of college, no student debt. Retirement funded 100%. Voted for Trump, but just for the taxes. Don't believe in COVID, still got the vaxes.
Pfizer, Moderna, I know you earn. Get one, but you gotta wait your turn. I get to the vax, I get what I want, so you get what's left.
Johnson and Johnson. All right, here we go. I feel so bad for Tom. I sent this story to Jacob, and I didn't know he wasn't going to say, you don't have to read it. But you did read it, and it was like 18 pages long, and it was one fact after another on top of another on top of another, talking all about how Major League Baseball makes a baseball. And I should have put the thing saying, tell Tom, he doesn't have to read it. I've already read it, and there's no need to read it. But you fell into it and ended up reading it, and then you truth be told, in the pre-show meeting, Tom's like, oh my God, that story kept going on and on and on. We have so much we have to read before the show. And the other thing was that I said it to Jacob on Thursday. I said, tell Sherry when she's filling in for Tom, she doesn't have to read it either. Tom, she slogged through that thing. So both of you infected by it. MLB. Major League Baseball nears opening day 2021. Much about the baseball is hush hush. Oh my God. This thing was so long. And I kept thinking, well, maybe it'll get interesting. But it just was one more fact just on piling on top of another one where it didn't mean anything. Is there anything that you took? I'm going to quiz you on it.
Okay.
But anything on there that you were like, wow, that's pretty good?
Here's the most amazing thing about all these. Yeah, and they give you details, measurements, distance. I mean, it's unbelievably detailed. The thing that
don't tell me your favorite yet. Don't tell me your favorite, because this might be a question. So here we go.
Okay.
Let's take you out to ball game. Here we go. Ready?
Buy me some peanuts and crack. Oh, I can feel I'm there.
All right.
I'm at whatever the stadium's now called.
Tom, what color red is on the laces?
This is a trick question, John. That's proprietary information, and they refuse to tell you.
Tom, the ball is made of cork, rubber, and what other substance?
Cork, rubber. Well, I mean, I guess it would be what's on the outside of that. I mean, there are layers of wool around the cork and rubber. Okay.
There you go.
Play ball.
Play ball. And here's the other one that you liked. There are 300 to 400 people that are in Costa Rica making these balls. And you found what to be most amazing?
The most amazing thing is each of those balls has to be hand-stitched with these four-inch needles. And the amazing thing is these 300 to 400 workers, they do it with both hands at the same time. That is amazing to me that they're stitching with left and right hands. Ambidextrous, absolutely brilliant Costa Rican workers.
You're out.
And then what's the last thing that they do with the stitches?
They take some kind of hook needle or something and pull them into those classic V shapes.
What? How do you know all this?
You're out.
Tracy Taylor, it was this story that was nothing but fact upon fact upon fact. Like, did you know that the number of cows, 9,600 cow hide every single year in order to make the number of baseballs that are needed by the MLB? I mean, this story is like you kept sorting through it, trying to find something that was like...
A
so Tom, he committed most of it to memory, and I had it as well. And at the end, you had nothing. Just like that's it.
Well, there's nothing wrong with all of those facts. It's just the fact that it was like, wow, it just sounded.
It's Jacob's fault, Tom. Why are we picking on each other here, Jacob?
Jacob.
Yes, I've birded.
Wake up.
Play ball.
Hey, they use cowhide instead of horsehide, though. They used to make balls with horsehide, and now it's cowhide baseballs. Another useless fact.
Thank you, Tom. Here's Tracy Taylor. Outside, ball one. Actually use.